Hey everybody, welcome to Between Two Racks with Mike and Sean.
How you doing, Mike?
Good.
Yeah? How'd you like your dinner?
Great.
Yeah?
So currently right now, we're over basically in Sean and Amy's dining room / kitchen, and we just had dinner.
Yeah, we had a little tinfoil packets of corn and shrimp and sausage.
It was good.
Yeah.
Super good.
I was supposed to put potatoes in there, but I'm trying to kick the potatoes right now. So
that's a good idea.
Yeah.
No, it was good the way it was.
Yeah.
Super good.
And it's super easy too. Like, and there's no dishes, so it's all in tinfoil.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It was good.
So what's new with you?
Not much. I mean, catching up after bear season, of course, you know, with the whole ranching and everything, it's just run. So we had to turn the bulls out. We calve quite a bit later than a lot of our neighboring ranches. A lot of that is due to just time, right? So we don't have a ton of time. So I calve a little bit later. So this weekend was all about getting the bulls with their girlfriends.
So you kick the cows out in the pasture?
Yeah, it's not quite that easy. Yeah. We got to bring everybody in.
Yeah.
And then from there, what we have to do is kind of go over a bunch of kind of our notes on to which cows can go with which bull, depending on how long we've had them and how long we've had that current bull. So basically, we don't want pops looking at any of his daughters.
Yeah,
that's what we're shooting for. So so there's a bunch of that, and then not only that, but then there's the mothering, right? So we have to make sure we have the right calves with the right cows, and so you've got to get them into an area, kind of let them settle. And then start watching from there. So we'll watch for cows that are gathering up on their calves and know that's the right calf, and then do some separating from there. And then the real fun comes into play when you release the bulls, right? They've been looking forward to this part of the year since last year, right?
I bet.
Yeah. So they're pretty worked up. There's only a couple things on their mind, and I imagine you can guess which both of those are.
Yeah.
And so fighting, of course, is one of them. And you know, I've got to instruct my kids. My kids are old enough now that they help. But of course, you know, even on a horse, you're not in a safe position if a bull happens to get a bit snorty. So it's all about teaching them where to be and where not to be. Anyway, it all worked out great. It was magic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I got this stupid mule out here that I got to deal with there. He thinks he's a bull.
Yeah.
He's, I don't know what the hell. If anybody's out there listening to us that has any info, I've got my mule all of a sudden thinks he's got a set of testicles and can jump everything in the frickin' pen. So
yeah, that makes it a huge pain in the ass. And you've got ponies out here. You've got small ponies.
That's the issue. He's trying to jump these small little pony mares and he's gonna hurt somebody.
Yeah. So. And it's different if you're dealing with an actual stud, because of course you can knock the nuts out of them, but in this case they should be properly knocked
out. And he's an old mule too, so I don't know if this is, like, I've only had him a year.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is something that he's always had
or maybe he's just into like those little ponies, right?
Oh,
isn't that my little pony thing? Isn't that a deal? Yeah, it's his little ponies.
Yeah.
He's a brony. He's a brony mule.
He's a frickin' dickhead is what he is right now. So anyways, we gotta try and deal with him. So if anybody has any ideas on what to do, or
maybe he can put his balls on ice. Well, there is no balls.
I was gonna feed him some saltpeter or something.
Yeah, just estrogen.
Is not what you to make you feel like a woman?
Okay, yeah, something like that. Estrogen. I don't know, yeah.
Shania Can you even Twain buy that?
Sings
Can you buy that in like
I don't
capsule
know.
Form?
Maybe. Yeah.
Throw it in his grain. Maybe
it might be easier to get a hold of maybe testosterone. Maybe.
Well, isn't estrogen that his problem though? Hey, he's got too much testosterone.
Yeah, there you go. Feed him tofu. Isn't that supposed to increase estrogen levels in men?
Yeah.
Feed him tofu.
Seems to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll go out there and he'll have a man bun and hipster pants on in the morning. No. Oh, sorry.
Little skinny jeans. Yeah. we're offending a big chunk of the population.
So we're getting a little bit far here. We've got Amy with us tonight. She's our brains behind the whole matter here. So
without her, none of these shows would be possible.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've been waiting for like an hour and a half for her to show up so we can do this show. So other than that, we're useless without Amy. So hi, Amy.
Hi.
Oh, and Amy's also my wife. So
yeah. Quick introduction.
Yeah.
Tonight we're supposed to be talking a little bit about how actually we're going to prep game to make it.
Well, we had to.
People don't think it's one of the worst things. I've come across so many people since I've started eating wild game that say they don't like mule deer or whatever, and then they come to our house and...
Yeah, and we cook it for them properly, and they love it.
So that's what tonight's show's supposed to be about. But, you know, well, and I've got these two kind clowns of, that I have kind to deal of. With.
Look, at the, look out the window there. There's freaking horses scratching their ass on my damn fence. I got the little baby there and my big fat gelding teaching
them. Focus.
Yeah. Oh, now your mare is over there, too, scratching her ass.
Focus.
Yeah.
Testing your panels.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, I got nothing better to do tomorrow than fix fence.
Oh, yeah.
So where should we start on the game
well,
prep?
Well, I think let's, before we get too started here, as usual, we want to kind of talk to the audience about where the show comes from, includes, again, Big Country Outfitters.
Big Country Outfitters, Antler Spring Skulls and Mounts.
And Mr. Mike Jones, Knife and Tool.
We got to get him here.
Yeah.
We will. We're slowly getting our technical support.
Yes, figured out.
So
once I'm back from Ontario, I will get Mike Jones here because he has something really awesome that he's working on with me right now that we're going to reveal.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So no, that'll be good. So yeah, you're taking off for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm headed back to Southern Ontario, where my folks are from, which is a place called Port Dover. Taking the grandkids back for about 2 weeks to take Rafe and do a smoked fishing competition as my husband farts.
Amazing. I did too.
I get a tummy ache.
That's
not a tummy ache anymore. That end isn't your tummy.
Here's my question, because I don't like fish. My kids love it. Sean loves it. Everybody I know really enjoys smoked fish. Do you got any secrets? I know my dad's going to share some of our secret recipes. Maybe you're going to send Rafe back with a secret recipe for smoking fish.
My smoked fish, I like the candied style fish. So my brine that I use for salmon is fairly simple. It's 3 parts sugar, 1 part salt. And you take the fillet, you put some slices in it, crossways, across the fillet, and like maybe an inch apart. Layer of fish, layer of brine. It's a dry brine, right? So a layer of brine, and then a layer of fish, flesh to flesh, right? Flesh down. And then some more brine. Then some more fish. And you just keep doing that for the amount of fish that you have, right? So you leave that in the fridge for overnight or 2 days.
Do you only do that with salmon?
No, you can do that with trout or anything. That's all I've ever used is trout or salmon. Kokanee, stuff like that. And then you can take it out. You rinse it all off. You can do that if you want it more candied. You can do that again. Do the same thing. Brine it again for another day or 2 days. Keep it in the fridge in a plastic container. And then bring it out and rinse it off. Let it air dry on some racks, let it air dry, and then smoke it from there. So, and then usually just before I put it in the smoker, I take some cracked pepper, crack some cracked pepper over it, throw a little pepper on it, and then, smoke it till it's done there.
So, yeah, I mean, that sounds incredible. And I was just talking, just before the show here, we were talking about the fact that I need to start doing that. But after listening to you, I'm just going to bring my fish here.
Sure.
Bring my kids,
how is your fish supply doing? Were those any good, those ones I brought you last
week? Yeah. I mean, we eat, you know, we eat the hell out of fish. We eat the hell out of any wild game. Yeah.
What's your favorite way to eat fish, Mike?
I mean, smoked, the way I grew up, because I grew up on that, in the remote area, not far off the native reserve, they have a way of drying fish and basically there's nothing for brine. They have their smokehouses. But it's simply kind of an air dry with an alder smoke. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And, it's a pretty simple thing. But I mean, as kids, we remember it, you know, very well and really, really, really liked it. So it wasn't candied, but it was definitely cured.
So that was that salmon up there too?
Yeah. So the salmon travel up that lake and from there they're
yeah,
headed.
That's an early run that goes up the Fraser.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a long, long ass ways for them to go.
Yeah, you know what? And surprisingly, for as long as they're traveling, they're in relatively good shape by the time they get there. I mean, from what I remember as a kid, compared to some of the ones that we've seen further on once they completed their run, they were actually in really good shape. So I remember that. I remember that taste. I remember that smell. I remember everything about it. But there really wasn't any candied or anything. It was just all about preserving.
Yeah. What about at home? How do you like your fish?
You know, what we try and recreate is basically what you would get on the campfire with the aluminum foil and the little bit of butter and a little bit of seasoning. And that's really what we shoot for. So we're not much into the whole pan frying or anything like that. Typically it is back in the aluminum foil to just be really similar to what you would find on the campfire. That's what we like the most.
Oh yeah. I find the kids and I really, really like, if you can fillet it, put it on a tin foil on a cookie sheet, either in the barbecue or in the oven, smear some mayonnaise on it.
I've heard that, you know, as much as I love mayonnaise and I love mayonnaise, I've never done that.
It's super awesome. It's super easy.
Really? So you
just smear some mayonnaise on it, right?
Yeah.
Spread some mayonnaise on it. Sprinkle your spices that you like, whatever. I like oven roasted red peppers and, you know, garlic salt and stuff like that. And just bake it in the oven. It's freaking awesome.
Wow. Yeah. So are you baking it covered in tinfoil in?
No.
Just open?
No, just on tinfoil. Yeah. Just put it on tinfoil. It just saves sticking to the rack, right?
Yeah.
If you can cook it on a cookie sheet or something, right?
You know, I just haven't done that. I got to do that.
It's freaking awesome.
Cool.
So, yeah, no, we do that all the time. It's one of my favorite ways to cook trout.
Wow.
I'm not really partial to wrapping them in tin foil and cooking them that way.
Really? Just kind of like the old campfire?
Yeah. No, I like it, but I'd rather have it this way, and I'm sure if I cooked it this way for you, you would.
Yeah.
I just can't get Amy to like it. We don't eat a lot of fish.
So the story behind that is like I said, where my parents are from, it's a commercial fishing town. My dad started his career on the water as a fisherman, and I was forced to eat fish when I was a kid. But
my dad used to hunt moose, I still like moose meat.
It's a little bit different.
Yeah. I can smell fish.
You know.
So what about sushi? Do you eat sushi at all?
She won't eat sushi.
Really?
No. She'll eat a stinky old can of tuna fish.
I like tuna. That's the only fish I like.
Wow. Yeah, she'll eat a stinky old can of tuna fish, but she won't eat a nice slab of halibut.
Salmon is halibut? The stinkiest fish out there.
Like, exactly.
But it's really good for you. How do you get all that good stuff? How do you get?
I'm good. I'm okay.
So
some of the other things that we've always had people say, you know, like, oh, I have a friend there, I guess a couple last year, we got a nice young mule deer buck. And I just brought meat over. They kind of quit asking since we have dinner and stuff with them what kind of meat it is. So I said, it's backstrap. And I had it in a marinade and brought it over. And
these must be pretty good friends. Backstrap and a marinade? Are you kidding me?
It was in the fridge and Sean had gone to work and it was going to not get eaten.
I think it was fresh. It was still fresh.
Yeah,
we hadn't even cut
up.
We do that all the time. Just hang it in a shed and cut fresh meat.
Anyway, I took it over there and she told me she didn't like mule deer. Well, she ate it that day and said, well, what is it? Oh, a mule deer buck. What? So I just wanted to get Sean because Sean's the better meat chef in our house. to give some tips for the people.
I didn't hear that. Can you say that again?
Do you really want to know where you're going to sleep tonight? Come on.
Yeah, well.
It's on recording.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Well, I take cooking and meat and wild game. Very serious.
Yeah. I don't, very serious.
So start yeah. your prep about how you prep your meat a little bit, how long you let it hang a little bit, those types of things.
Well, honey, I like to age my meat. I like to hang it in the shed as long as I can possibly hang it before I cut it up, right?
Temperature.
Well, you need it needs to be fairly cool, and the bugs got to be out. So, you know, you got
to
be
getting to be out or
well,
away.
Yes. Yeah.
That's
you know,
better clarity.
Sorry. So you definitely it's got to be, you know, October, right?
Yeah.
To be safe. So, but most people overdo it cooking their meat. They kill it again.
I agree.
It's dead already.
I agree. Did your mom do that as well?
My mom, my dad. Actually, no. My mom was a relatively good cook.
Really,
my grandmother was horrible.
Yeah,
like
where they thought they had to
murder
cook the hell out of everything because you were going to catch some sort of wild disease.
Yeah. No offense, Dad, but my dad is still like that. When he comes down with us and has dinner with us, when I'm slicing the roast or whatever, you can see he's like, I want that piece on the edge that's super duper cooked, right?
Yeah.
And I want that piece in the middle that's
meat longer because yeah. I'm like,
it's crazy. It's like an old mindset.
I think they're allergic to spices.
Well, maybe.
Like you put some pepper and some garlic on Dad's meat there, and he's
what is this? What is this sorcery?
You're trying to kill me? Yeah. Sorry, Dad, but
they're never going to hear this anyway.
Yeah,
I don't imagine mine will.
So, anyways, yeah, it overcooking it, you know, it just
yeah. So basically, what you're saying, rule number one.
Well, I don't know.
What, but it's true, isn't
my
it?
My rule.
No, but I think with any wild game, because of the lack of fat, I mean, these are lean animals, wild animals.
The more you cook it, the drier, the tougher, the tasteless.
Exactly.
You know?
So you can almost say rule number one, think about it a little, do not overcook it.
Yeah. Yeah. So like rare
olive oil. Butter is fabulous. Butter brings flavor and salt to everything.
Rare, medium rare is like anything more than that and it's...
Yeah, overdone. It's shoe leather.
You know, well, unless you're dealing with, you know, bear or something, then you gotta cook it good. But
bear, you want to make sure it's cooked to the right temperature.
Yeah, it's a lot like pork. You have to think of bear a lot like pork. You're cooking. You know, you don't eat your pork pink in that sense, right?
And we'll just go with we're cooking deer or moose or elk.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is my new favorite all-time recipe, and
okay.
I make this all the time, and I don't think I'll cut another steak out of a backstrap.
I agree.
Oh yeah, that's pretty darn good. Yeah.
You take about a 12-inch piece of 12-inch piece of backstrap. You put your spices on it, whatever you want. I just you know, willy nilly make my rub or whatever you want to call it. Right. Put that on there. Shut up. Then I sear it in a hot pan, sear it all sides, all the way around on the ends. Then I'll throw it in that. We got those, what are those frying pans called?
The rock.
Rock frying pans. They're all metal. You can throw them in the oven, right? So I sear this backstrap really good and cover it with mushrooms.
Yep.
Throw it in the oven for half an hour, hour, whatever, till it about a medium rare. Take it out, let it rest, slice her up. Man, everybody loves it.
Absolutely. So are you preparing this end from raw or frozen? That would be either thawed out or raw, right?
It'll be thawed out.
Right.
Yeah, you want it thawed out. And you typically don't want to cook something that's still frozen, right?
Right.
You want it to...
Especially with wild game, it just makes it tougher.
Yeah.
Coming from when I first met Sean, I didn't eat wild game and I treated everything like beef. So I had a sharp learning curve on how to cook.
Yeah. It's definitely a different,
it is definitely a different thing. Yeah. And the other thing is that you, yeah, you can defrost things, but it's always better to defrost things slowly rather than in the microwave.
So the only place that I find any different there is, like I was talking about earlier, I'm, because of my time, which typically I don't have a lot of, you know, my household, we're the kings of the slow cooker. Yeah. And so at that point, I can take an entire roast and throw a roast in there and put all your seasonings and such. And literally, you know, 11 hours later or something like that, open up the slow cooker. And so that's the way we end up, you know, it keeps the moisture in, and we end up doing quite a few things like that just strictly due to time. And yeah, and it keeps it very tender.
I love cooking in a slow cooker.
Yeah.
You know, especially in the winter. Just throw something on and you're out. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's there's lots of good slow cooker recipes.
And stew meat can be absolutely fabulous in the slow cooker.
It's absolutely
the best way to make your...
You know, another good thing for stew meat is canning it.
Yes, I've done that.
And it's very often do we have excess meat when it comes to the fall. Yes. We were just talking about that earlier. But if you do have extra meat and you need to make room, can it. If you can it, you get another 2 years life out of it, or more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's great for camp life. Yeah. I've actually, a couple years back, I used elk meat, and we were down to one freezer, and there it was packed absolutely full, and I had 3 bowls of elk meat that I thought, what am I going to do with this? And I did some research, learned how to use my pressure cooker a little bit, and you just pack your jars with your raw meat, put all your spices that you would use for stew. You know, I have my favorites, but salt is always one that you want to make sure that's in there. And we made stew, and the only thing I didn't put in was potatoes, because potatoes will go mushy because of the amount of time that you have to pressure cook your meat for, which is 90 minutes, if anybody's interested. Pre-made stew, threw some potatoes in quickly at camp, and we had already made meals when you come home from those late nights. Mm-hmm. You just had to heat it.
Oh, I love canned stuff.
And it was
completely... On the topic of canning, we go back to the fish. Just recently, I opened up 2 jars of a jar of salmon and a jar of trout that I canned in 2012.
Wow.
And nobody knew the difference.
No.
What I did was I made a cracker spread out of them, and nobody, you know, so you can get amazing shelf life out of with canning.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
Celine does lots of canning, doesn't she?
She does. And what she does is a little bit different. Again, anybody listening will introduce Celine. Celine is not only a very close and dear friend, but she's kind of our number one camp cook as far as it goes to the outfit. Well, she is the number one. In fact, I couldn't do any of this without her, and she's got some incredible ideas and ways that she does things. And as far as it goes to canning, typically with moose meat especially, and elk as well, she will do the whole, I think it's kind of a... chicken fried type kind of batter almost that she will put on the mousse.
Oh, really?
On the stew meat. Yeah. So then she'll kind of sear that. And I don't remember the proper name for it. It's called, is that blanching? Is that what? No, that's what you do to like nuts and shit, right?
Blanching is what you do to vegetables,
man. We're talking about meat and it just went there. So anyway, so she'll like sear that and she gets it kind of browned a little bit. And which is obviously not blanching, but then she'll put it into jars and
braising.
And is it braising?
That maybe would be the word.
Yeah. Probably braising. Yeah.
Is it really braising? Yeah. Is that what? Braising. Anyway, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, sure.
I'll tell you a good braising recipe.
Okay. So then she cans it from there. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So she doesn't add anything else. She doesn't add anything else you would add to a stew. It's strictly the meat. Yeah. And then she can take the meat and she can do a lot of different things with it.
Yeah.
And you can do that with hamburger, too. There is incredible amounts. Same thing. If you've got a freezer, you know, you don't have a ton of freezer space, you can do lots of different things with hamburger as well. Lots of people don't spice their meat, but you can also pre-spice your meat and then just label it from there so that you've got,
if you're like all of us, which have, you know, get in late at night, don't know what to make for dinner, it is a crazy fast way to throw together a meal.
So you're canning ground meat then?
Yeah. Just hamburger.
You just, Never ground burger.
Some people brown it and some people don't. Some people, you can brown it before or after canning. There's kind of two different ways of doing it. And
Never heard of that before.
And it can be a huge time saver for hundreds of different recipes.
Yeah. Well, I'm all about that, saving time.
Yeah. We actually do lots of canning.
Yeah.
Or Amy does more than I do. I used to be more involved, but and I'm usually doing something else now. But
you're guiding. Yeah. That's what you're doing.
So what do you, a couple hundred pounds of tomatoes, every fall?
Yeah, usually about 200 pounds gets us to the following August.
Yeah.
August to August.
Usually. What the hell do you do with 200 pounds of tomatoes?
Can them.
But then what do you do with them from there? They're in cans, but then what do you do?
Spaghetti.
Everything.
Soups.
Tomatoes, just like you would do the can of tomatoes from the store.
Grocery store, diced
you guys don't
tomatoes.
Use much tomatoes?
No, not 200 pounds.
You would be surprised what 200 pounds of canned tomatoes looks like. It's about 35 jars. It's actually 200 pounds of tomatoes when all said and done. It does not equal out to, it probably equals out to maybe four flats of 12.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Not a lot.
Yeah, we do all our own tomatoes. We don't grow them. We grow, what, maybe a quarter of our own tomatoes?
Yeah.
And the rest we buy from Donnie, usually.
Oh, yeah.
What else? Our cabbage. We do all our cabbage.
And I'm going to look sweet cabbage. If I can. So I have a recipe that I do canned sweet cabbage, and this year I'm going to look at trying to learn how to make sauerkraut. But the sweet cabbage that I make is a German dish.
So can I just interrupt here? Mm-hmm. Are we able to like post our recipes up on our webpage?
I can put them on our webpage. Yeah. For sure.
So if anybody wants to check out some of our stuff we make.
The red cabbage, it was something I came across when I was a teenager. At a German restaurant that they served it as a side dish with schnitzel. And
of course, it was with schnitzel.
Schnitzel, absolutely.
In a Lederhosen?
But it was something every now and then I made it, and Sean loved it. And I thought, geez, I got to be able to can this. And so last year I grew, it's a surprising, red cabbage grows a lot denser than green cabbage. So with three cabbages, I could make 12 jars of red cabbage. And it is, if you like pickled beets.
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. Not. I'm just going to throw that out there. Not in the slightest. These are beets.
Okay, they don't taste like beets.
No, they taste like shit, but pickled shit.
We'll make it one night.
I'll make red cabbage for you. Do you like red cabbage to begin?
Yeah. No, that's okay. That's so, I'm good with that.
It's similar type because it's pickled, but it's sweet. Mm. And you put a little bit of nutmeg and cloves in with it.
So that what you're explaining then would go good with just about any wild game then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh yeah.
It'd be incredible.
And it's great because you just run downstairs, grab a jar, throw it in a small saucepan,
warm it up.
Warm it up or throw it in a bowl and put it in a microwave or whatever.
And you don't actually have to eat it warm.
No, you can eat it cold too.
Yeah, that would be great with like a roast or something like that.
Yeah.
That'd be incredible.
That's great. Another thing, and we don't make this, and I wanna make it. I'd learn how to make it is sauerkraut.
Yeah. Good sauerkraut. That's what I said. I want to learn.
Apparently it's supposed to be super good for you.
Healthy. Yeah.
Easy to make.
Yeah.
It's great for any gas issues you might have. I mean, all that gas leaves your body very quickly.
Yeah.
Dan actually was explaining how to make sauerkraut for me last year, our hunter Dan.
Really?
Yeah, he was giving me some tips. So wow. I'm going to look into trying to make that. Another thing that we used was canned potatoes. And incredibly enough, canned potatoes with, I used some of our wild game to make soups, but cream soups. Yeah. So you throw your cooked potatoes with some heavy cream in a blender. Blend it up and throw it in a pot, warm it up. That's your cream base. And put all your fresh veggies in.
Have you been using those canned potatoes?
Yeah, it's all gone.
You see,
are they? Because I spent 2 days on a deck cleaning little baby potatoes for that, and then we never did eat them. But now I'm glad to you know?
Yeah, just something so simple. You just take them, throw them in a blender, put some heavy cream or milk in with them, and then you can use ham, bacon, or I use some of our wild game in there, and a little bit of fresh veggies, and away you go. You got a beautiful soup.
So I'll tell the listeners a little secret on cleaning baby potatoes.
yeah, forget deer.
Yeah.
Here we go with the baby potato cleaning. Yeah.
Well, man,
you need a sharp knife.
It's a lot of scrubbing when you're scrubbing baby potatoes. So I took a brand new, not a used, toilet brush, like a toilet bowl brush.
That's good, yeah.
Cut the handle off, put it on my cordless drill in a bucket of water.
Yeah.
It works pretty good.
Cleans. Did it make that sound?
Cleans them baby potatoes. Cleans them
potatoes.
Yeah. Cleans them baby potatoes up just slick as...
Nice.
Yeah.
So you just throw however many potatoes in there, dump in a bunch of water, and just go to town with your cordless drill.
And my toilet brush, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It works good?
Yeah, works good. Then you can them, and they're... Yeah, so...
All right, so...
Okay, back to wild game.
Yeah,
I mean, but you know,
this is all good.
This is all good because it's all like... Yeah.
We do a lot of... As you can tell, I have a fairly... abundant garden and greenhouses usually. So I've got my August is usually eaten up with preserving vegetables. And then come September, I get thrown with meat.
Yeah, it's perfect. That's the whole idea. I mean,
yeah.
As we were discussing, you know, I'm getting lower. I mean, my kids eat wild meat like they're savages. They absolutely love it. And of course, I'm very, very careful. I'm because of the household I grew up in, and not to hurt your feelings, Mom, but you cook the shit out of everything. I mean, until it was dark, dark brown to the core, it wasn't coming out of the oven. Anyway, I was very careful about that because to tell you the truth, I mean, when you're a kid and you've got that, again, not to hurt any, you know, anybody's feelings, but when you've got that chunk of meat thrown in front of you, or you can choose a wiener,
yeah,
you know, wiener's a little bit easier to get down, right? So
your jaw so much.
Exactly. Well, yeah. So you know, I eat my share of wieners and it's not good. But with my kids, I never wanted to do that. So I wanted them to appreciate a rare or a medium steak. I wanted them to know what that was and appreciate it. And they do. They do. Yeah. They love it.
Yeah.
They absolutely love it. So wild game to them, not only is it just a very important part of their diet, but they love it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can have a freezer full. We will go into the fall with our freezers packed, and come this time of year, I mean, I'm scratching at the burger.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And burger is something that, you know, we use a lot of burger.
Yeah.
We use it in everything.
Just because it's it's quick. Abundance of recipes.
Like one of our big things right now that we use sausages. Burger for, well, not sausages, but our mock taco salad.
Oh, yeah.
Without the tacos. Make a salad.
Right.
You know, big green salad.
Yes.
Fried hamburger.
Absolutely.
And salad. Pour the hamburger over the salad with some... little bit of cheese and all your fixings.
Yeah.
Just minus the tacos, right?
Absolutely.
Or the burrito or taco.
Cut out carbs.
Yeah. So but we eat that. We eat that quite a bit. Amelia doesn't like that.
No, she doesn't like meat in her salad.
Yeah. So, but.
Once a rabbit.
I hear you when you say, you know, the older people cook the hell out of everything. Like I grew up with my grandmother and like Wednesday nights was. hamburger macaroni night, right? So we had like a package of hamburger,
yeah,
just in the pan.
I'm laughing because I've been there.
Don't chop it up. It's just like a square brick of hamburger cooked, and then after it's cooked all the way through, cut up into pieces, and that's, you know. Oh,
shit. I can't say
God,
that.
God bless you, Granny. Oh. I love you.
I'm sorry, guys. I've never been there. My mom was a good cook.
Oh, I just relate so much that even looking into his eyes as he tells me this story.
And you know what?
I'm like, sitting beside you, man.
Like we ate chicken wings when chicken wings weren't cool, right?
like when it was the only thing left on a chicken.
Yeah, it was shake and bake chicken wings. That was Thursday night.
Is that why you like chicken wings so much now?
Because they taste so much better. Yeah. No, and you know we had like shake and bake pork chop.
Yeah, you know, yeah. No, we had some of that.
To, you know.
Yeah, so dry.
Yeah.
So you were coughing while you were eating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean,
the good news is you were never poisoned. You never got a disease.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I was in the same boat. So laughing. I mean, I remember those. I remember the roaster pan full of ground meat with elbow macaroni. And
that was a Jack fight. Russell. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, elbow macaroni, yeah. With the can of tomatoes in it.
Yeah.
Tomato macaroni.
Absolutely.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
So another thing that we've gotten good with roasts is it's come summertime because we've run out of steak, like you were talking about. Your freezer is a little bit scarce.
Yes.
We do eat roasts, and I use the slow cooker a lot for roasts in the wintertime, but come summertime, it's really hard to, like, gravy and roasts and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's hard to get into that kind of meal when it's barbecue season, right?
It's tough. So something I started doing, and Sean kind of showed me, like I said, is the guru of meat in our house, is we defrost a... roast and throw it on the barbecue and just salt and pepper on the barbecue.
See, I've never done that.
It's freaking amazing. It's just like steaks.
Wow.
They can wait a bit.
That's all right. That's, you know, the kids come downstairs and say the dog's going to pee,
The dog does not have to go to the
I know. Bathroom. They can wait 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
So that I made that the other night, and you just let it rest.
Right, that's important.
It totally is making sure that it rests. But you can take even, and it doesn't have to be completely defrosted to throw it on the barbecue, and just a full roast. You know, season it really well with your just, and I, like I said, I just used the other night just salt and pepper, no barbecue sauce, no crazy rub of any kind, just salt and pepper on the barbecue, whole roast. Just let it sear.
That works really good.
Kind of medium heat.
Yeah.
What I do is if I'm going to do a roast or something, big chunk of meat like that on the barbecue, I crank it up high, get it good and hot.
Yeah.
And then I'll sear all the sides, right?
Yeah.
Give it a good, you know, blackening on all the sides. And then I'll crank the heat down and just let it, crank everything down to the low and let it sit for, you know, 45 minutes, half hour. So
are you guys, do you guys use thermometers much, or do you just kind of give a, like a poke?
Yeah.
If it's too rare, I put it back on the barbecue.
Once in a while, we'll have her too rare.
She's a bit juicy.
I'd rather be too rare than
absolutely
overcooked.
So if you,
you can always throw it back on or whatever, absolutely. You know.
I like things very rare, so I'm horrible for keeping them a little bit rare.
Yeah. So, that's. I don't know. We eat that quite often.
Yeah, and it just makes for and it. It takes a little bit longer on the barbecue.
We didn't even get onto the schnitzel.
Schnitzel.
Please do.
One of Sean's
my favorite my minute steak schnitzel type meal.
Yeah, they're pretty friggin' amazing.
So now we have our minute steak machine. Goes on the grinder.
Right.
Makes your minute steaks. But before I used to have to hammer them out with a meat tenderizer, right? But anyways, you take your minute steak, whether it be tenderized with the hammer type or the machine type, and bread it. And I like to bread mine with cornstarch.
Yeah, way better.
And that's it?
Huh? Well, I put some spices in the cornstarch, right?
Okay. Yeah.
No egg or anything.
No, just flour it with the cornstarch, and the cornstarch makes everything crispier, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Just about all my breaded stuff now is cornstarch.
Chinese food, like we make lots of different
stuff. My ginger elk is all I bread it with cornstarch. So anyways, you bread this and then in a hot pan with maybe, I don't know, 1/4 inch of oil.
Yeah.
Fry it. Put it, fry all your little minute steaks.
Yeah.
Put them in a casserole dish.
So you're frying them quick though, right?
Like yeah, they're quick fry.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you just throw some fried onions and gravy over top of them, put them in the oven, bake them for, 20 minutes, half hour. Yeah. That's goodness. Wow. Yeah. It's really good.
It's candy.
But I think the kids' favorite is probably just quick fried schnitzel steaks there.
Crispy.
With that three times.
Schnitzel steaks. I can't even say it once.
What was that? You became a leprechaun now?
Well, I got my schnitzel.
Is it even a German thing?
Well, I got my...
and my pot of gold.
Well, I'll be fucked.
That's a Scottish accent.
That's perfect. That's amazing.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Get back to the food.
So the kids' favorite, and it's quite fast to do, is just quick fried minute steaks.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Breaded, and then they just dip them in ketchup. They love them.
Cool.
Yeah.
Ginger elk.
Oh, my ginger elk is
ginger elk.
I got to look up my recipe for that. That one's a little more complicated.
You can talk about the meat portion, not the sauce.
Oh, you just slice your meat into strips, right?
Right, right. Like a stir fry type
strip. Yeah, yeah. Bread that
in cornstarch.
Cornstarch, but I like to bread it and then let it sit for a bit till that breading on the meat gets a little bit tacky.
Okay.
And then I'll do it again. Roll it in the cornstarch again, and then you deep fry that. And then, but when you bring it out of the oil.
So it's important for the oil to be quite hot.
Yes.
So you want that to be hot, and now you're putting it in for?
Just till it's golden brown brown.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Once you bring it out, you got to put it on, you don't put it on paper towel or nothing. You put it on a cookie sheet. Okay. A cake rack.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's up in the air.
It can drip a bit.
Drip. But yep. if you put it on paper towel, it gets soggy.
Okay.
The batter will get soggy. And then my sauce recipe, I'll have to look that up. But
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Then you just put that in a bowl, put the sauce over top of it, give it a mix up, and you got your ginger elk.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's super, super awesome. Or deer or moose or whatever.
Ginger, whatever you want.
Yeah.
You could do ginger bear.
You could.
That'd be incredible. Ginger bear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure it would be great. Yeah,
it'd be incredible.
Another thing, I think we got time to...
Talk about whatever you want. Rip it up.
Did you turn the lights out?
I never turned a light on.
The sun just went behind a tree, I guess.
That is it.
You're not a big fan of giblets, are you?
Like grazing, heart, grazing in the gut pile?
Heart, liver.
You know, when I was a kid, it's not that I'm not, but it has to be prepared right. Again, this goes back to our parents, not to shit on my parents, but my dad, what he would do is we would go out and we would kill a moose. And when we brought it back in, part of almost the ceremony behind it was the cutting up of the heart, the liver, and the kidney into kind of maybe 3/4 inch squares, and then from there would all be fried in the same pan together, and then a little bit of water and some spices. It gave it a slight gravy, just a little bit of gravy, and then a heaping plate of that, basically giving thanks for the animal that stepped out in front of you. So I ate that, that very strong organ meat taste just kind of flowed so as a kid, that's probably a little bit too much. So it's not that I don't, because I will eat liver. I will eat heart. I've kind of skipped on the kidney thing right now. But I will eat liver and heart. And properly done, I think it's incredible.
I haven't really grazed too much on kidney. I think Granny used to make something, kidney something, but the liver and heart, I like liver and heart. Learned my lesson on eating it too fresh.
And too much of it.
Twice. Yes. You know?
Yeah. Very, very sick man.
Oh, my goodness. Last year.
Oh, God.
We had, my son and I had shot a deer. We ate the liver before it was like
even cold.
Cold.
Yeah.
So I had to leave that afternoon to go back to camp to guide. So we had a lunch of fresh liver, and I made it about an hour and a half up the highway. And yeah, it was horrible. Lost my cookies in the car dealership there along the highway. Oh man! And by the time I got to camp, I was good though. But
right. And then that dealership,
and that's exactly what it was. It was just too fresh, too
rich. Too rich. Yeah, too but, much.
The tongue. Have you ever eaten tongue?
Yeah, I have. And I, you know what? The bottom line is, I've heard of 1,001 different ways of, and it's probably good, but even the whole just thin it sliced or you know,
I will cook that. Tongue. There, I shit you not. I will never leave a moose tongue in the bush again.
Wow.
That is how good
it was.
And I had eaten it before a few times. Like I said, Granny's cooked it for
me. Yeah, that's kind of
we used to eat pickled pig's tongues, shit like that.
Right.
And but last year I made it was a moose tongue.
Yeah.
And
took you a long
time. And it was, what was the recipe out of that? What's the name of that book? Buck Moose. And
okay, so that's something that maybe we can get available on the website.
Yeah, okay.
Hank Shaw, yeah. I think. Yeah. Anyways, you braise it for an hour,
okay,
or boil it for an hour, skin it, take skin off,
right?
And then you roast it for another 2 hours. And then, like you said, thinly slice it with a little dip. It was freaking amazing.
I don't know, man.
I'm going to have to try it.
What he'll do, because he's really famous for this shit,
right,
is cook something and not fucking tell you what it is.
Yeah, I'm going to probably know, because there's not a lot of meat out there that you thin that slicely.
Oh, you'll know when I pull it out of the pan. It looks like a big old cooked tongue sticking out there.
Yeah.
He's also cooked like things like testicles and shit for kids, and they like sausage. Yeah.
No. You see, I ate testicles last year, and he cooked some up, and I'm thinking that they were a little bit on the completely uncooked side.
They were undercooked. Yes. Yeah.
Undercooked.
Yeah. They needed to crisp.
No. Those ones. Yeah.
Moose testicles in camp there. Oh. I did not cook them. One of the hunters cooked them.
Yeah. And they were there was some slipperiness.
They were a little undercooked.
I have to give Sean a lot of credit because.
Absolutely.
There is one thing, like, if he can make something that probably don't taste all that friggin' fantastic, like, I'm not a big rabbit fan.
Right.
Deep-fried recipe.
Fried the rabbit a couple times.
Yeah.
You would never know the difference.
That's like our
freaking tasty.
That's our new tradition now, yeah, in the fall to go get everybody together.
Yeah,
all we go out, all the kids, everybody. We go out one day and try and get as much small game as we can get.
Right.
Rabbits, grouse, whatever, and then we come back here and we have a fry. I cook everything for everybody.
Right.
So last year we got, what do we got? We didn't get a whole lot.
Gross, two rabbits.
Yeah, something that we got. Anyways, we had and everybody loved it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and it's
great.
It's great. It's a great way to introduce.
First animal.
Yeah.
Cool.
Was she six, seven then?
She's seven.
She shot her first rabbit. And of course it was behind the shoulder.
Yeah,
shot. So
yeah, she's got that, and she was pretty proud.
Oh yeah,
of
with her.
She was the only girl.
Waste nothing.
Only person that shot a rabbit
with her little pink 22. But yeah, you just have to.
Again, I think the biggest thing that our kind of emphasis here is take the time, research how you're preparing these animals, because you can ruin just about every one of them. I mean, you can ruin a really good beef steak too.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the best beefsteak out there if it's not cooked properly.
And that's to everybody else's own preference.
Yeah.
I mean, so some people do. A lot of ranchers I know, you know, if we happen to be eating a beefsteak, if we're at a barbecue or something and somebody asked, probably I would guess 85, maybe even 90% of anybody that deal with cattle, the living cattle, not the stuff under cellophane, but the living cattle, they all want it well done.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're used to, you know, seeing them stand there or whatever. It's a mental thing.
Yeah.
But most ranchers, cowboys, farmers, whatever, they want it well done. So, and to them, that tastes great. To me, there's no way. So everybody's going to have a bit of a different taste on how they like things. But I do believe that most wild game is way too overcooked. And that would be the message that I would want to get out to most people.
And the other thing, too, that you can really take away is adding some olive oil. Olive oil to your marinades, olive oil to your pan, no matter what you're doing. Like Mike was saying, you know, these are lean, lean animals. Make sure you add some fat.
Oh, yeah.
Butter is a fabulous one. We usually all have butter in our fridge, you know.
Well, we should. We should throw the margarine out.
Yes, get rid of margarine.
That's right. And we should have butter. That's mm-hmm. right.
You know, when I have somebody that has never tried wild game come over for dinner or something and I'm cooking for them.
And we have a fair amount of those.
I always make sure I have I cook them the best of the best. Right? So they know what the good, because I've eaten some pretty rank stuff.
Sean,
and I can
Sean
see
shot one that I couldn't make taste good.
Yeah, you couldn't even make chili taste good.
Right.
Right. And
that can happen.
That
shouldn't turn anybody off. That can happen. Now, what was it, though? It was probably a mule deer late season.
Very, very late season. Big old ruddy buck.
Yeah.
Yeah, his neck looked like a dinosaur neck.
Yeah. It's tough to make those taste great.
Yeah, he did not.
And that's understandable. If somebody's tried that for their first impression of wild game, I could see where they think at all. But when somebody comes and I make sure they have the best of the best for their first experience with wild game.
Yeah, so. And I think too, you know, if you're a meat hunter and you're looking for the best tasting meat, you've got to know that those early season animals are your better tasting animals.
Yes, yeah.
And typically, I've had good late season.
You know, but it depends on the animal. Mm-hmm. Like I would say that the mule deer, that's rough.
Yeah.
But even an elk and a friggin', you know, snorting old bull moose. I mean, they've been a little bit chewier, but I haven't had any that taste.
I think out of all the animals, the mule deer and the caribou are the ones you gotta watch out for. Like I've shot elk that were so rank, you know, you could smell them
well before you could see them.
Yeah. Yeah. And as long as the meat is looked after and clean and you do all the prep, and that's a whole nother podcast
that we gotta absolutely.
You know, and as long as you're careful and take pride in everything, you'll have some good meat.
Absolutely.
But, you know.
Well, you won't have some good meat. Every piece of that elk from one end to the other is going to be incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think that's a lot of people's mistake too, is they, you know, they shoot something, throw it in the back of their truck, rolls around in the back of their truck all day while they drive around, show their buddies how big the buck is or whatever. And then, you know, 10 o'clock that night, they decide to half-ass skin it, you know. Dirty knives and, you know, touching the meat with the pissy old hair and stuff like that. Yeah. But like I said, that's a whole nother
podcast. That's a whole nother podcast.
How are we doing for time here? Are we running out or what?
We're never running out.
Closing thoughts here? Should we do closing thoughts?
Do a closing thought, yeah.
All right. What, you got a closing thought there, Sugar?
No, actually, I really honestly think one of the best things people can do is take their time, research some great recipes, because there are thousands and thousands of great recipes, because wild game is the best stuff on the planet. And, you know, I haven't been eating it for most of my life like Sean and Mike have, and had that bad experience, so...
It just makes the good experiences that much better.
Exactly. Yeah. So I have to say that, you know, like, really, when people cook beef, I'm like, whoa, what's that smell?
Yeah,
you know, and the but not draining the fat off.
To clear that up, that's typically the stuff they're going to buy at the local grocery store,
sure. Yeah.
Which is way different than even the stuff that we produce. But yes, I agree with what you're saying.
And not only that, is the fat in the pan.
Yes.
You know, I've gotten used to not ever draining hamburger.
Yes.
Ever.
Oh, yeah, you fry a pound of moose hamburger, you fry a pound of beef hamburger, it's two different.
Completely different things.
You lose a lot of volume on your beef where you don't.
You know what? Even though, like, our ground pork that we do, you fry a pan of ground pork that we do compared to a pack of ground beef or pack of ground pork from the grocery store, it's night and day different.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Night and day different.
So I think if food quality is your primary aspiration, getting right down to gardening, producing, manufacturing your own sausages and things like that, and experimenting with some of these things are my way of saying get out there and do it, because it is so rewarding. So rewarding.
Yeah.
One, and yeah, for what's available out there today, I mean, you can walk up and down the aisles of Walmart and throw shit into your shopping cart, but it's never, ever going to be.
It's not the same.
It's not the same. No.
I think my closing thought, you know, I think half the problem with the world today is we don't stop and take the time to, you know, look at all the good stuff that we do have in front of us. Like, we don't, you know, you don't need a big garden to grow all your own vegetables and stuff, you know. You don't need a lot of wild meat to have, enjoy a freezer full of meat. You know, you can shoot small game or hunt small game, and, you know, birds, ducks.
Well, hell, geese. Cooked right, the neighbor's cat is pretty good.
Hey, you know, that's another recipe. As strange as it, I've eaten lots of roadkill deer that I've picked up on the highway. I've
never done that.
I've eaten lots of roadkill deer.
Never done that.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Really?
If as long as you're
as long as you knock all the flies off it.
Well, come on. Man. As long as your state or provincial laws
allow it, for it.
You know, yeah, absolutely. There's absolutely nothing wrong with harvest or processing a fresh roadkill. Fresher roadkill.
You might be a redneck.
Yeah. Well, I
know. Whatever. I mean, that's good. It's not wasteful. It's a good idea. I'm not going to do it personally, but good on you.
I've done a lot, so there's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
There's nothing wrong with it at all.
No. It's yeah. So, anyways, I don't know. I lost track here.
It was your closing.
My closing thought is the world is your oyster. You just need to
find it on the side of the road.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, until next time, hopefully you enjoyed this podcast. We hope and pray we're getting better and better. We want to bring you some information along with some entertainment, and hopefully we've done that again this time around.
You betcha.
Anyway, till next time, it's going to be difficult for me to say stay hard to Amy, but I'm looking at Sean as I say that, so stay hard.
You got her.
Bye-bye.
Bye.